your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Hello, friends, and welcome to your second weekly slice of the Kings of Anglia podcast. You lucky people, from the young guns at a noisy hotel lobby in Germany to two grumpy old weapons in our bedrooms. It's Mark Heath and Stuart Watson this week, friends. Stewie, you're back from holiday. The people haven't heard from you for a while, actually. How are things? How was your holiday? Tell us all about it.
Hello, people. I'm back. I had a very lovely holiday. Thank you. Nice family holiday in Mallorca. Been to the northern part of the island a couple of times now, around Alcudia and Palencia. Good food, good weather. And good it already time. Feels like a lifetime ago already. You know what it's like when you come back from a holiday and it feels like it wasn't just last week. But very nice. Thank you.
What was the beer you were drinking out there, Stu? Because I was speculating as to what beer you'd be sipping whilst clad in budgie smugglers. Is it Estrella?
They tended to have San Miguel on tap, I think. What most of the restaurants tended to have.
Solid. Delighted to have you back, old friend. Obviously, much to discuss. Today, friends, is going to be ostensibly a mailbag show, but clearly there's some transfer space stuff we have to start with. Just to say, if you haven't listened to it, I alluded to it there. Alex and Ross did a podcast covering the training camp and subsequent games last week, which you haven't listened to. That's available for you to listen. That covers all the stuff from last week. This will be forward-looking at transfers and looking at mailbag. So without further ado, Stu, let's dive into the sexy stuff before we get into the mailbag. Transfer links. There's one above all others, which is rumbling on, becoming a saga, which is quite pleasing because it's alliteration. The Smodix saga, or even the Sammy Smodix smart saga, which is tremendous. Easy for me to say. And we've had updates, mostly from the, well, entirely from the Blackburn end. Friday night, John Eustace comes out and says, still in talks, hinted that there might have been a deadline over the weekend. That's come and gone. Had his first press conference ahead of the season. They play, friends, on Friday night against Derby County, Blackburn. And so basically it's still ongoing, Stu. So what's the latest as you understand it?
Well, I can only tell you what John Eustace himself has said. He's done his pre-match press conference. Lest we not forget, the Championship season starts this weekend, a week earlier than the Premier League kickoff. And Blackburn are the Friday night game, as you say, against newly promoted Derby County. Smodix hasn't featured all pre-season. As this situation rumbles on, it's been a good 3 weeks now that the clubs have been talking, potentially longer, but it's been sort of 3 weeks since that first Ipswich bid went in, which we believe is around £6 million. That was rejected. It's been reported that Blackburn want a lot more than that, potentially as much as 20 million has been quoted in certain places. So it's the age-old game of the two clubs trying to meet somewhere in the middle. I think Ipswich have found Blackburn difficult to deal with previously with the Sam Gallagher situation back in January. If you remember, that was all played out quite publicly. It depends who you speak to. I think the people from the Ipswich end that I've spoken to have kind of said, we can't get Blackburn to put a figure on it. And we're finding that frustrating. And then I speak to people at the Blackburn end who are getting briefed and they say that Ipswich are making very small incremental increases in price. And they're finding that frustrating at their end as well. And that all leads to John Eustace, the Blackburn manager, coming out and saying it's not fair on the player, it's not fair on the club going into the season with this uncertainty surrounding their star player. So bit of a Mexican standoff, really, I guess, and we'll see who blinks first, if anybody.
What's your take on the whole thing, Stu? Because it's been a bit of an odd old saga all told, really, hasn't it, from the start of it to this point now. We talked before, Smodics doesn't really fit the profile of what McKenna has historically been looking at. A guy who's had one really good season in the Championship, potentially a lot of money changing hands. Feels like an odd old thing entirely.
Yes. Yeah, it does. I can understand Ipswich drawing a line in terms of how much they'd want to spend on this sort of transfer for the reasons that you've mentioned. 28 years of age, has just had the season of his life, but, you know, hasn't, you know, isn't a player with Premier League pedigree. So they won't want to pay over the odds. Mark Ashton will be very aware of the wriggle room they've got with profit and sustainability rules. Easy for me to say. And I can understand his value to Blackburn. They were a team that sort of flirted with relegation at one stage last year, and his value to them and what he can produce to the team, it won't be easy for them to replace him. I can understand them having their own valuation, and it may be that the two parties can't agree something here. But what is certain is that Ipswich look very light at the top end of the pitch with the season, just over a week away now, with Broadhead injured, with George Hurst having picked up an injury, with, you know, they tried to get Philogene, that's not happened. That attacking unit needs some numbers, especially when Kieran McKenna likes to make, you know, 3-4 attacking substitutions in a game. And we know it's about keeping that energy high at the top end of the pitch. And that's why Ipswich had so many comeback wins last season, so many late goals was a big part of that. So I think they're lacking the numbers there. I'm sure there's lots of other plates spinning in the background that aren't being played out so publicly as this Smodics one as well. So I know people are getting a little bit nervy about sort of the numbers at the moment, but I know the season kicks off in a week or so's time, but the window stays open till the end of August. And I'm sure frantically they're working hard behind the scenes.
What's everyone worrying about? Got Freddie Ladapo to play on the left wing. What more could you want in the Premier League? Friends, the other link we've had this week, another one from yesterday, fairly solid, Stewie, midfielder with Premier League experience, Oliver Skipp from Tottenham Hotspur. Do you want to tell us a bit about this?
Yeah, Oliver Skipp, 23, 24 next month. He's got a decent amount of Premier League experience. If he were to come in, for example, he would go straight to the top of the list of Premier League experience at Ipswich Town, topping Ben Johnson in terms of game time in the top flight. He's struggled for minutes last season under Ange Postecoglou, was coming off the bench quite a bit. But when I saw this link, you suddenly think, that makes a lot of sense, because he'd worked under Kieran McKenna many years ago at Tottenham, coming through at the youth team there. So Kieran will know about his qualities on the pitch and, just as importantly, off the pitch as well. And I think you look at the signings that have been made, we'll come on to Connor Townsend in a minute, but it's all about maintaining this culture off the pitch as well. And I think Oliver Skipp, you read about him and you hear what people say, that he's got good football IQ. And I think he sounds like a Kieran McKenna type of player, someone that is comfortable going and taking the ball off the goalkeeper and starting attacks from deep. Yeah, I'd be all for this one. I don't quite know how the deal would happen. He's contracted till 2027 at Spurs. So whether it's a fee that would be a decent fee, you would imagine, or whether it's potentially a loan with a view to buy, whether there's a clause in there that if Ipswich stay up, they're obligated to buy him at a certain price. Maybe it's that sort of scenario that we're looking at. Remember, Ipswich can only sign two loan players, domestic loan players this summer. So they've got to think very carefully about how they use those. But an interesting link, and he's apparently, according to the Telegraph, being eyed by all three of the teams that have come up. So that's Leicester and Southampton as well.
Okay. Well, something happened last week, Stu, while you were sipping San Miguel. Do you go culture, by the way, when you're in Spain? I mean, obviously, normally, a pint of San Miguel goes down lovely. In Spain, you've got those just little glasses of red wine. Is that what you're on in Spain?
I do, actually. I wouldn't normally, at home, you wouldn't get a little half pint, but over there, it feels like I'll have a half, and or I did have a few little glasses of wine with my meal as well.
Very civilized.
Yeah,
very civilized.
When in Rome.
Well, anyway, when you were doing that last week, Stu, Town were making the sixth signing of the summer, Connor Townsend, left back, backup left back. The people haven't heard from you about it. 500 grand from West Brom seems on the face of it some very sensible business, even if it doesn't really get the old pots race going. What do you make of it?
Yeah, it doesn't fall into our category of sexy stuff, does it?
Not really.
It's not the 20-goal striker or the exciting winger that we can wax lyrical about, and someone who's got a high ceiling that could be this in the future. But not every signing can set the pulses racing. And if you step back and think about it, if I'd have painted a scenario to you a year, 2 years ago, that Ipswich would be spending £500,000 on a backup left back, that tells you everything about how far and how fast this club has progressed. Mm. Was part of a West Brom side that had a very mean defence in the Championship last season. Has been in the Premier League with West Brom for a season in that behind closed doors season. And even though West Brom got relegated, he emerged from that with a fair bit of credit from what I gather. Everything you read about him, he's a very humble, grounded family man that I think will really fit in with the culture of things at the club, and I think he'll get stuck in with the community side of things as well. And Ipswich lost a few of those kind of standard setters, those really good dressing room guys that were on the fringes of the team. Sione Aluko retired, obviously, is now a first team coach, but people like Jackson and Don Ball and Janoi Danassian, who's kind of still around at the moment but has been released. It's not to be underestimated the role that those guys play day to day and on the training pitch. And Connor Townsend will hopefully help fill a bit of that void. And it was prudent to get a backup to Leaf because, you know, he churned out 40 plus games last season, which is remarkable given his role in the side, covering that entire left side, up, down, up, down. Yes, there's fewer games in the Premier League, but the intensity of the action is going to go up a notch. And there was that slight concern that if he were to get injured, then Ipswich would suddenly be kind of fudging it a little bit to fill in at left back. And that could have been a problem going up against the standard of wingers that they're going to be up against. So sensible, smart bit of business this for Ipswich Town, I think. And potentially looking further ahead, you know, Leif Davis now technically going into the final year of his contract, although he's a protected asset for two because Ipswich have that 12-month extension option. And who knows what the situation will be around Leaf this time next year. And if Ipswich do go down, we hope they don't, then ready-made, experienced champions, top-end championship left-back already in the building in Connor Townsend. So, I like this. Good transfer, I think.
Mm, good, sensible, solid business, I would say. Certainly not the sexy stuff, but sensible rather than sexy. Right then, friend, let's move on to mailbag. We've had quite a few questions for mailbag, which is great. A mixture of football and non-football. I think we should probably just stick with the football for the first one, just because it's on the transfer theme. So Matt Casburn asks about Smodex. Obviously, we've covered that. And also who's realistically could be signed to partner Morsey. Again, obviously, we could talk about Oliver Skip. He also asked about another link, which was doing the rounds, I think, yesterday, which is O'Shea from Burnley. Dara O'Shea said to have turned down a move to Town in favour of trying to get a move to Brentford. And he just asked, what does that mean for Wolfie, the Fridge and Burgess? I thought we were sorted at the back. Is McKenna looking at playing three centre-halves, Stu? So what do you make to that one?
Kieran McKenna's talked about wanting two players for every position.
Mm.
And centre-half is an area where that box is ticked already. You've got Wolfie and Burgess from last season. Greaves has come in. George Edmondson. Even Axel Tuanzebe, who I think will probably be seen as a sort of a right-back option to start with. Obviously, that's where he finished last season. And with Harry Clark still not fully fit after undergoing Achilles surgery, he'll probably be kind of backing up Ben Johnson at right-back in the short term. But centre-half's been a very early on in the summer when there was conversations about what Ipswich needed most. A lot of people did talk about centre-half because of the goals that Ipswich conceded last year. And for me, you know, I've said this before on previous podcasts, it's you attack as a team and you defend as a team. And it wasn't just a case of centre-halves aren't good enough. But I can understand why Ipswich might want to add someone with a bit more Premier League experience in that centre half unit, and O'Shea would be someone that would provide that. He's played there for West Brom. I think he had a season in the Premier League, obviously last season as well with Burnley. So not one that I can give any sort of credence to as a rumour at the moment, but it wouldn't shock me if Ipswich were looking to add that sort of experienced centre-half still to the unit. And the knock-on effect, I think, would be that one would leave. Edmondson, you would think, looking at the game time from last season, would be the kind of the one that would be in the danger zone there for moving on. But certainly far bigger priorities for Ipswich Town at the moment than centre-half, that's for sure.
Absolutely. I do wonder as well if there's some of these rumours that are kind of little leftover bits that are a bit odd. Like, for example, since they signed Connor Townsend, I've seen two or three links to left-backs. You can't imagine they're still interested in left-backs, clearly. Yeah. So a lot of these things I think you have to take with a good dash of salt. Right then, let's take a non-football one from the sweetest of Welsh princes, Harvey Davis. Evening, gents. Hope all is well. Two-part question, Harvey, and we'll let you get away with that because we like you and you're a friend of the show. Which is the best day of the week to order a takeaway on, Friday or Saturday? And what's the best kind of food to order? Keeping it standard with a pizza or Chinese or going a bit more rogue? Come on, you blues, he says. So takeaways. Are you a big takeaway man? I have to say that we're not really in this house. We can't remember the last time we had a takeaway, in fact.
Yeah, I like a takeaway. Yeah, our go-to would always be an Indian. It would be to get a curry.
Mm. What would be your go-to within that sphere? You got
Jalfrezi.
Mm. Like a bit of heat.
Yeah.
Lovely stuff. I say we haven't had a takeaway. I just remember we had a takeaway Thai the other week with a friend of ours, which is very good. Excellent Thai green curry. Normally, I think at a push, I would go with pizza over pretty much anything because that is the ultimate food. So good question, Harvey. Thanks very much for getting in touch. Peter, our man in Warsaw, dear old Peter, wants to know, what are the implications of Ashton assuming the chairman's role? Is he starting to spread himself a bit thin, given the existing role has just expanded since promotion? And then also, what the actual F was AJ doing, having a donut with his cooked breakfast? Have a word. Let's tackle the second part of that first, Peter. I don't know if you saw this, Stu, because obviously you're away on holiday, but AJ shared a picture of him and Rossi at breakfast in Germany, where he had bacon, hash brown, sausage, and then on the other half of his plate, he had half a donut.
On the same plate?
On the same plate, which goes back to me saying when you're on holiday, obviously the boys weren't on holiday, they were working, but you do tend to have mental breakfast. But AJ had dumped half a donut on the same plate.
Yeah, same plate is where I draw the line. I mean, all bets are off when you've got a sort of breakfast buffet like that. Then I will follow up my cooked breakfast with a muffin if it's on offer, but on a separate plate as a little dessert alongside a nice coffee or something, not on the same plate.
100%. Absolutely. But then he is only 22, 23. He's got a lot to learn, the lad. What about Ashton then? Some people have said this to me, actually. So Ashton is now chairman of the club as well. Essentially the emperor of Ipswich Town. Now, Ashton, since O'Leary's retired, he's not only CEO, he's now chairman and overlord of Ipswich Town.
Is that what the E in CEO stands for?
Emperor. Yeah, probably does now. But clearly, Ashton is Mr. Relentless. It never stops. And now he's chairman as well. Do you think there's a danger that he... I mean, I'll be honest, I don't really know what the chairman's duties are. But are you worried about that, him taking that on as well?
Not necessarily, no, because I think Michael O'Leary will still be that kind of wise sounding board for Mark Ashton. From afar, it's not like Michael O'Leary was a day-to-day operations guy at Portman Road. He wasn't. He lives, I think, over Oxford Way, and you know, he was at games and was as more, I think, to be a kind of someone who knows Mark Ashton very well, having worked together on and off for years, to be that guiding hand. And I think his main role, his legacy really, was getting the takeover over the line. I remember speaking to him on a Zoom call quite early on, Michael O'Leary, and seeing all the files behind him and him sort of talking about how much goes into a takeover like that. And So his job was kind of done there, and as he says, sort of mission accomplished, really. I don't think it's going to suddenly add masses to Mark Ashton's workload. I know Luke Verhoeven has stepped up his kind of his duties over the last 12 months and has now got a place on the board as well. So it doesn't bother me too much on that front. It's not like we go back to the sort of back end of the Marcus Evans era where I did feel that Lee O'Neill was massively taking on too much. You know, he was trying to do everything behind the scenes, you know, scouting, going and watching loan players away, speaking to agents. He was doing absolutely everything, and that was too much. But no, not in this scenario. I don't think it will massively change things.
Two notes on Mr. Ashton. For a man who obviously works 24/7, 365, I thought he was sporting a lovely tan in a little walk around the ground with Andy. Not got that from Suffolk, has he? The Suffolk summer, I would suggest. And also, you know, shoe friends, Stu, in that video. Just saying. Andy and Ashton, same shoes.
You think he's trying to impress the boss?
Wow. Far from me to say that. He never copied my shoes when he was working here, let me tell you. moving on. Let's do a football one, shall we? There's been a lot of questions to you about finances. Sam James and Nick Lumley both say have questions around finances. So Sam says, any thoughts on Huddersfield's claims that we would have been hot water with the EFL over our spend if we hadn't been promoted last season? And Mick Lumley says, could you give me some comeback to people who keep telling me we're going to have issues with FFP or whatever it is in this division? K-Mac is suggesting we need a lot more players. We spent over 60-odd million. How much more before we're in trouble? Okay, so clearly, finances are forever a talking point in football. Broadly speaking, you're allowed to lose, in the EFL, you're allowed to lose £13 million a year, or £39 million over a three-year period. And now Tanner in the Premier League, they're allowed to lose £35 million a year. Mental, really, isn't it? So essentially, as you go up through the leagues, you're just allowed to lose loads more money. And it's assessed over a three-year period. So I think if you look back at the most recent accounts for Ipswich Town, which for the year they got promoted from League One, their losses were in the region of, and I did email this to myself earlier, so I best double-check this because I want to get this right. Their losses were in the region of, he says, if I find the link. There we go.
I've got it here. 21-22, I've got a 12.6 million loss. 22-23, yeah. 18.2 million pound loss.
18.2, yeah.
And the main thing to say is that Ipswich were very transparent in those latest set of accounts. You're obviously working a year behind, so we haven't seen the full impact of the spending in the Championship last year, which would have gone up, but Ipswich didn't do anything wild in the transfer window, did they, last summer after getting, it was, you know, basically the bulk of the team that had come up. But they did spend well in League One, there's no doubt about it. But the transparency in that, when the accounts went out, and I'm just trying to find the quote here now, it was Tom Ball, the Chief Finance Officer, put a statement within those that just said that the level of loss is within both the club's FFP projections and the business plan approved by the ownership. It is expected that in the absence of any player trading, losses may increase further as the club looks to compete in the Championship. That clearly happened, and we'll see the fullness of that in when the next set of accounts comes. But on FFP compliance, he said the average three-year loss is 6.9 million and totals 20.6 million over the period. The EFL compliance threshold is a £13 million per annum average loss and £39 million over the three-year period. They know the figures. They know what they're working with. Mark Ashton, you have to remember, sat on the EFL board for many years. When he first came in, I remember sitting down and him talking to me, talking me through the difference between the League One financial rules, which is SCMP, Salary Cost Management Protocol, which then differs to the Championship, which then differs slightly again in the Premier League. We're now talking, you know, we're hearing all this stuff around Everton and Forest and others with PNS. Yeah, they don't just suddenly wake up and think, right, what are the rules now? They've been meticulously planning this through. Ashton's always talking about the headroom that's allowed. Yes, Ipswich have spent circa £56 million on the four players that they've spent money on this summer, but you only have to look back at the piece that Alex did with Kieran Maguire, the football finance guru, recently. The TV money goes up to £105 million in the Premier League. If Ipswich were to get relegated, it's £42 million in parachute payments. We know about the record shirt sales and retail income. You can pretty much guarantee that Portman Road is going to be sold out every week as well. So they know what they're doing, and they won't put Ashton's sort of buzz phrases. We'll be bold, we'll be brave, but we won't be reckless, and we won't put this club in any sort of danger. So, I think those comments from the Huddersfield CEO might be a little bit misguided, I would suggest.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's definitely an interesting debate to have, though. And as you say, I think at the moment Town are absolutely fine within the framework of various things. What should we do next?
The only thing to say on that FFP stuff is that you've seen some sort of wheeler dealing going on this year, and the landscape has changed drastically with the points deductions that were handed out. And I think you've seen a knock-on effect in the transfer market with clubs maybe being a little bit more careful. It's based on the PNS stuff is based on kind of pure profit on a player, and that's why you've seen academy players being sold for quite big money at clubs, because that's pure profit. And then you would question, have Ipswich, how many kind of assets like that have Ipswich got if they needed to kind of cash in next year to, or the following year, to kind of get themselves out of a hole? For example, you know, we saw this flurry of transfer activity at the end of June, which was before the deadline, where Newcastle sold Elliot Anderson to Forest for £35 million as an academy graduate to kind of get themselves around PNS. Have Ipswich got an asset like that that they could suddenly cash in on? Leif Davis is probably the most sellable one, but as I said earlier, he's now effectively going into the final 2 years of his contract. In terms of academy players, Wolfenden, Humphreys, I don't think they're quite in the conversation where you'd be getting millions of pounds for them at the moment. So that's just something to kind of be mindful of. And that's probably why they've signed the sort of players that they have in Hutchinson, Delap, Greaves, all in their young 20s, English players that, you know, yes, you've spent sort of 15-20 million pounds on some of these players, but if they can have one or two really good seasons in the Premier League, you can double, triple that sort of money if they really take off. So that will be the thinking.
Absolutely, yeah. It is fascinating, isn't it? And also remember that now Town are promoted, so they can, it's assessed over a 3-year period, so they can lose 35 million in this coming year, but the other 2 years would be under EFL, so 13 million over those 2 years, so 26 million plus 35 million is how much they can lose in that 3-year period. And obviously, sides who've been in the Premier League for all of that 3-year period can lose, what's that, 105 million. So it's quite an equal on that front. Big wider debate to be had there, clearly. Let's do a question from Foyster. Sticking with the football, he says, gents, is it me or is it very, very quiet on not only the transfer rumour front, but also the club media team? He says, then again, could just be me. I mean, you want to be in our group chat, Foyster, is what I'd say. Getting pinged transfer rumours from Alex on holiday or Ross at 11 p.m. at night. It's not quiet on our transfer rumour front. Trust me, Stu. It's great when they do that, isn't it? It's great fun.
Yeah. It's not my favourite time of year where we're kind of having to kind of react to every little spit and cough that's kind of out there. Has it been quiet on the? It hasn't been.
It hasn't been loads
of new names. I can kind of understand that there's not been kind of loads of new names kind of floating around. I think everyone was expecting the last week or so to be a little bit busier. But if you look back at transfer windows, they tend to go in sort of peaks and troughs, and you get this early sort of bit of business where the free agents get snapped up, like Ben Johnson, and then you get a little period where there's some money signings that it just starts to snowball, and then it goes quiet for a little bit. And then the kind of the loans and the loan market is something Ipswich will explore, tend to happen a little bit later because clubs wait until they've got their own house in order before they let people out. you know, there'll be clubs further down the chain, for example, waiting to see, is Cameron Humphreys going to be available? Is Ali Alhamadi going to be available? And Ipswich are saying, well, possibly, but we got to wait until we get people in ourselves. And they'll probably be in a chain similarly with ones that they're looking to bring in as well. So, yeah, it hasn't been, I think, the Smodic thing sort of rolling on has added to the sense of frustration. But I think minimum three players is what Ipswich need, possibly more before the window shuts when you look at it. Central midfield, we've mentioned Skip, is certainly an area that, you know, another body is required. And then at least two, possibly three in that kind of four-man attacking unit. Hard to put positions on them because of the versatility factor, but one who can play on the left, one who can play in that sort of chaplain role, and somebody that can play up front as well, I would argue, with the Hurst injury as well. So two or three in the attacking unit, one in midfield minimum, and then that potential centre-half situation that we've already discussed.
Mm. Right then, Richard Lee, Tricky Dicky, says, let's put the doctor in an awkward position. Pick one, Everton or Town to go down. The other stays up. Which would he prefer? I think I already know the answer to this question, Stu, but cool. Feel free to...
It's like a parent being asked to pick their favourite child. It's unfair, isn't it? I've got to be careful. I could have family listening here, but the honest answer is that it would be Ipswich to stay up because it's my career, it's my job, I'm wrapped up in it. It affects my day-to-day life a lot more. The level of my fandom has kind of ebbed as I've got older. I don't know if that is just the job or just getting a little bit more perspective on life, probably a combination of the two. But I'd have to go with Ipswich.
Yeah, I think... I mean, earlier I said this is sort of grumpy old men podcast, and I think I definitely, again, agree with you there, Stu. In the years that I've been doing this job, having come into it as someone who for whom sport was just a hobby and a pastime and a passion, doing this job has definitely taken away a large portion of my fandom coming into it, because it's now what you do for a living, isn't it? So you then need something to take your mind off what you do for a living, which isn't anymore being a fan, as it were, of football. We consume it in an entirely different way. And also, as you say, that the passing of age makes you realise there are a number of things in life maybe to take your time a little bit more important, you should say. Where should we go next? Let's do Tom Baines. He says, for one game next season, you get your ideal press day. What does that look like? You can choose your food, where to sit, and you can go wherever you want at any time. So, Stu, you'll be going back to Portman Road for the first time in 3 months, which is mental, on Saturday, covering the Nice game, which we'll come on to in a bit. And it's going to be, certainly when the season kicks off, it's going to be very, very new and exciting. But in your ideal, if you could have one dream day, what would it be and where would you be and what would happen from a press perspective?
Well, I imagine some of the trips that we're going to do this year probably won't be far off. Sort of the dream scenarios where there will be moments where I kind of reflect on, again, we have to always qualify this with respect.
Yeah. All due respect.
Which means the complete opposite, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I didn't go to Forest Green. They're always the first club that comes to mind. But some places where there wasn't even a working room, there wasn't plug sockets, you could travel 300 plus miles and not even get a bottle of water or a cup of tea. I'm not precious in any way, shape or form. I just want some working Wi-Fi if possible, please, and somewhere to plug my internet in, and a tea or coffee would be nice. And there were times in League One where we weren't even getting that. So this is gonna be unbelievable going to Old Trafford and the Emirates and the Etihad, and from what's been described to me as other colleagues in the industry, is going to be top notch in terms of food, press facilities, press conference rooms, vantage points, all that sort of stuff. So, I'd be lying if I said that wasn't something that I'm looking forward to experiencing.
In terms of where you can go, clearly there are quite strict rules as to where you can go on match days. Would you like, in going to American sports, for example, Stu, they are incredibly open with the dressing rooms, for example. There's a period where I think it's like 10 minutes after a game, players have got to sort themselves out, and then they open the doors and the press can go anywhere and speak to anyone. Is that something you'd like to
That wouldn't work in the world of football, Mark. I've seen how professional footballers can behave. I think that would take a little bit of a cultural shift. I think they'd be walking around unclothed, behaving poorly. Not sure they're ready for that. But the mixed zone situation is something that I'm intrigued to see. It's not, you know, normally it's a lot of the stuff sort of further down the leagues is you just go down to the pitch side once the stadium's kind of emptied out and there's a bit of a huddle, or sometimes players are brought up to press rooms. But I think the Premier League is more of a kind of a mixed zone situation where there's a kind of roped off areas in tunnels where journalists can gather, and then the players have to kind of walk past that area, and it's up to them whether they stop or they don't.
Right.
And you quite often see that's when the headphones go on, and they might pretend to be on the phone, particularly after a defeat. So that could be a test of relationships and the test of kind of the character and running towards adversity and mantra and all that as to who stops and faces up after some difficult days. And clearly there is going to be some. So, I mean, Alex is kind of more the player man. I'll probably be doing most of the manager stuff. So I'm intrigued to see how that will all work.
Well, we know they've got a new press conference room coming soon, which looks like a bit of an auditorium, doesn't it? I look forward to seeing that. Lee asks, why did they, meaning Alex and Ross, leave the sanctuary of a quiet hotel room to record a podcast in a hotel lobby? Good question, Lee. If you've not seen this, Stu, the boys recorded in a hotel lobby on Sunday, I think it was. So there at various times there are people talking quite loudly near them. There was a baby crying, all that kind of background noise. Obviously they're not here to answer this for themselves, but I can only guess, Lee, that they'd already checked out of the room and were recording that podcast while they were waiting for an Uber or whatever they were doing in terms of transport. And I think their transport was the stuff of adventures, Stu, from what we've heard from them. And
I'm waiting to hear more about all of that. I've seen the pictures.
Yeah, exactly. Before we finish with some football then, Stu, Jimbo wants to know, what's your favourite tipple? Have you got a go-to tipple?
Talking sort of alcoholic beverage here, I assume.
I would have thought so. Yeah.
You can't have a non-alcoholic tipple, can you? A glass of water isn't a tipple. My favourite tipple would be, I've said this a few times, I like an Erdinger. I like a wheat beer. I like had a couple of glasses of wine on holiday. Very nice. But I wouldn't say I'm a big wine drinker. Yeah. You can now, the floor is yours to talk about whiskey, my friend.
Well, I'd say to Jim, I mean, it all depends on the scenario, the time of day, what I'm doing, what the weather's like, who I'm with. But I've got a lot of favourite tipples for a lot of different times. Broadly speaking, if I'm off to a pub, I'm having a pint of lager, Neanderthal, give me a lager, Peroni, Madry, Cruz Campo, big fan of that. I'm very, very basic when it comes to lager. But in terms of tipples, late at night, cigar on the go, definitely rum, definitely single malt whiskey. And I could sit here and talk about whiskey for quite a long time, which I won't, because I'm aware that's quite boring for a lot of people.
But I'd always tell.
I'm not. Do you know what? Until recently, I've not really been much of a cocktail man. But then we discovered espresso martinis while on holiday a few years ago. Addicted to them now. Just discovered porn star martinis. Again, big fan of those. Had quite a lot of them in Portugal recently. I love an old fashioned as well, whiskey based cocktail. Margarita. Just not really sure what a dirty margarita is. I'm not sure I want to order it. but I like normal margaritas.
I like a Negroni before a meal. It's quite nice. Yeah.
They're very bitter, Negronis, aren't they? Which I think are an acquired taste for people.
I think that's the point, isn't it? It's to
an aperitif.
An aperitif to whet the appetite.
Like
that. But, and a white Russian, more of a sort of a dessert cocktail later on, maybe post meal. That's made famous by the dude in what's that film called?
The Big Lebowski.
The Big Lebowski, yeah.
Yeah. So that, yeah, I'm very much equal opportunities when it comes to booze, Jim. I haven't met a tipple I don't think that I don't like yet. Apart from, no, I can't think of one actually. right, let's do a bit more football. Where are we? This is a good question.
What's your one shot, like sort of liquor that you've got some bad memories associated to from your youth, but just the smell of it would.
Oh, definitely flaming Sambucas.
Yeah.
Or what was the other? What was it called? Was it called Goldschlager or something?
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Do you remember that? They had little bits of gold floating in it.
Yeah, flakes, yeah.
And when it was at college, journalism college, you could get those for like criminally low prices. You know, you could literally kill yourself for like a tenner.
I think it was called Chicago's, is a place you used to go, and they did the rock exchange, and the prices of the drinks would change on a big sort of electronic board over the night, and there would always be something that was like 50p
or
something, and you'd end up drinking, mixing about 5-6 different drinks on a night. Goldschlager. The urban myth around that was that the little flakes of gold kind of effectively sort of cut your insides on the way down and enabled the alcohol to go into your system quicker. Not too sure how much truth was in that. But
yeah, I mean, obviously back then you weren't really drinking for the enjoyment of it, were you? Mm. I mean, that was pretty foul stuff. You were drinking to get ruddy drunk. And that resulted in me being the first ever person in my university intake stew to be sick in the student union. So that was a dubious honour for me. Embarrassed I was. This is a good question from Craig Evans. He says 2000-2001 versus 24-25. How about comparing your predicted starting 11 v Liverpool against a starting 11 from our first season back in the 2000-01 season? Analysing, comparing each player in each position and choose who's the better player or who you'd have in your dream starting 11. Right, so I went back and I found the starting 11 from that game against Tottenham Hotspur after Town had been promoted. They lost 3-1. The starting lineup was thus, Stu. Richard Wright, Herman Hreiðarsson, Titus Bramble, Mark Venus, Jamie Clapham, Gary Croft, Matt Holland, Jim Magilton, James Scowcroft, David Johnson, and Marcus Stewart. So if you had to pick your starting lineup now for the Liverpool game, what would it be?
For Liverpool now, should we do it position by position then? So let's start with goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. Richard Wright or Aaron Muric. Problem is, we don't know a lot about him, do we? So yeah. Richard Wright was someone, had he got into the England setup by that point, or was that only sort of once they sort of in the Premier League? But he was certainly being
he was
talked
touted,
about.
Wasn't he?
Yeah. I think you'd have to go Richard Wright there, wouldn't you, on the goalkeeper front?
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Was that a back three? Am I
well,
right?
It's really, I haven't been able to find the formation because in this bit they've got. They've actually got five players listed as defenders. Herman Hreiðarsson, Titus Bramble, defender/centre-back. Mark Venus, defender/centre-back. Jamie Clapham, defender/midfielder.
Clapham would have been left wing-back, I think. And then,
okay. Vino. And then you've got Croft as the defender/left-back. So, hard to tell from that. And I'm afraid I can't actually remember what formation
this is. Where we need Hutchie here. This
exactly.
We've
been all over it.
Let's do some other positions. Holland Morsi is an obvious comparison, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you've got a midfield of Holland and Magilton as opposed to Morsi and Luongo. So that's a debate. I think you probably
I think Jim gets in certainly. Yeah. And then it's a really tough call between Morsi and Holland, I would say, but
yeah,
you might with recency bias, you might sneak Sam Morsi into there.
And then you've got Scoey, you've got David Johnson and Marcus Stewart up top.
How about left back? Would you go with Leif Davis or Jamie Clapham? I think you might go with Leif.
I'd go with Leif there, definitely.
Potentially. Yeah. Titus Bramble, or was Bramble in that starting 11?
Yeah, Bramble and Venus are listed as
so Bramble's obvious comparison would be Wolfie as sort of two homegrown centre halves, very different stylistically.
Yeah.
again, it's hard because you're thinking about these players with the career that they went on to have, with Titus playing in the Premier League for several years, and you kind of think what he was then as a very sort of young player coming through that had some raw edges, but I think you'd still probably just about tip it towards Titus maybe there. Marcus Stewart and George Hurst, would he be the comparison? Someone that would,
I guess,
probably be the obvious comparison in this squad.
Surely going to go Stewart there, aren't you, all day long?
Yeah. But then you got to remember that they'd signed him at that stage. Again, are you thinking of Marcus Stewart through the prism of top English goal scorer in the top flight that season and what he went on to do? Or are you thinking of him purely at that time as someone they'd signed in February, scored the goals to get them up? It's a really hard comparison to do, but we'll have to go away and give this some thought. This might be good. This might be some good print web content to give it some proper thought and analysis, and we'll put together a combined 11, perhaps.
That's a good idea. I mean, this speaks to an issue that we have going into the season, which we actually chatted about the other day, didn't we, Stu? It's such a step into the unknown this season. We just don't know until they kick off. Last season we were talking about, could players step up from League One to the Championship? Would they be able to compete at that level? The answer there was a resounding yes. But this is even more of a step into the unknown. How competitive are they going to be in the Premier League? Until they play Premier League games, we honestly have no idea, do we? We just don't have any idea. So very, very interesting stuff.
Hutchinson or Royce, that would probably be the two lone stars. That would be the comparison. Exciting, versatile attacking players.
Again, it's hard
to sign them.
It's hard, isn't it, to compare, as you say, because we know what these players went on to do and how they performed in the Premier League for Ipswich Town, and we just don't know that for the current lineup and how they're going to perform. Let me read the starting lineup against you, and you tell me if you take any of these players in the Town squad at the moment. So you've got Richard Wright, we've already said, probably over Muric. And you've got Horidison, Bramble, Venus, Clapham, Croft, Holland, Magilton, Scowcroft, Johnson, Stewart. So we'd say we'd definitely take Jim Magilton, yeah?
Yeah, I think his sort of qualities is something that's lacking in that central midfield. So, yeah, he'd be one straight away that I'd take.
Holland or Morsey would be a really good debate, because obviously Morsey is the captain, that's the first guy who's led Town back to the Premier League since Matt Holland, both brilliant captains. Good debate there. You probably... Would you want Horidison, Stu? In the current...
Herman. Big Herman. His comparison is probably with a Greaves, probably.
Yeah.
Did they sign Herman that summer, didn't they?
That was the summer
promotion.
They signed him, yeah.
So
yeah,
that, yeah. His is the obvious comparison with Greaves, someone who's come in. And again, we don't know what Greaves is going to do. It's a great debate.
It's a really, really good question. It is a really good question. Maybe it does lend itself to some wider examination.
The strikers you mentioned there. So you've got Johnson, Scowcroft, Stewart. And then you're comparing them with Hurst, Delap, Alhamady at the moment as the front three. So you would suggest that as a unit, the 2000 unit is stronger than the current unit at the moment. But we'll go away and give this a little bit more thought. It's slightly difficult for me because I know there's a lot of Town fans that were of that era that would be able to give a better opinion than I, that didn't watch that era week in, week out. But yeah, and obviously the game's changed a fair bit in the 22 years that have passed as well. So yeah, we'll go and give that one a bit more thought. Maybe come up with a combined 11 and then get people to maybe give their opinions off the back of that. Spark a bit of a debate.
Good question, Craig. And let us know what you think, friends, listeners and viewers. A couple more questions then, Stu. Finish with some non-football. FPL Tractor says the young guns had their weekend away and it was lads, lads, lads. What would the Watson and Heath equivalent look like? I'm guessing private member clubs with whiskey and nice early nights. Maybe discussion about Antiques Roadshow. Here is the big misconception, friends, about my friend Dr. Stuart Watson. Because you are, as much as you come across as a very calm, thoughtful, sensible, analytical individual, get you on a night out and you become the party monster. And I obviously add that into the fact you've now got a child, and no one goes harder than a parent without a child on a night out.
Correct.
I think our ideal nights would probably be quite different, Stu, between you and me.
Now. We might be on slightly different pages. Yeah, there's been times before when I've been on tours away with Hutchie or with Alex and Ross now, and I'd be the one sort of maybe itching more to go out. I mean, I was Ross's chaperone in Manchester when we went for the podcast awards, and that
we lost you
that
to
was
the
quite
night.
A late one. Yeah, yeah, lost us to the night. Yeah, maybe a bit of a dark horse on the going out front.
Absolutely, 100% you are. Whereas for me, I would definitely be more on the somewhere nice and quiet where we can actually talk to each other and have some sensible conversation. I can have a really overpriced whiskey. Would be very much my sort. Actually, to be fair, my perfect night would be not going out at all, staying at home.
Yeah, you are a bit more of a home bird.
Well, I'm just antisocial, Stu. Let's call it what it is.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Patrick Palmer, our old friend Double P, final question, good one. Jaws theme, because it's the 50th anniversary of the book, which I wasn't aware of, but it also explains why Lego have just put out a Jaws kit, which I'm very much eyeing. Time to assign the kings to their roles. Who is Chief Brody, the hero who slays the shark? The bastard fisherman Quint, who gets pissed while wielding harpoons. He's the one who gets eaten, isn't he, famously? The shark and the bimbo who gets eaten on an inflatable. Well, I think, I don't know what you think about this, Stu, but I would say definitely you would be Chief Brody. You'd be the sensible guy in charge, the voice of reason, the one who's in it to the end, who blows up the shark. Which leaves us just with the shark, the bimbo who gets eaten. I'm not sure you're still allowed to say that. But
I've got one piece of logic that all I can call upon is...
Yeah.
You've got the teeth to be the shark. Heath the teeth.
Okay, that's good. I mean, I have got the teeth. So I'll be the shark, which just leaves Quint, who's a grumpy old fisherman who ends up getting eaten, and an unfortunate lady who also gets eaten early in the film. I mean, I think it's fairly obvious who the unfortunate lady might be, isn't it? Don't you think? You know, when Brody says get out of the water, there's going to be one person left in the water, and that's always going to be Ross, isn't it? Just sat on an inflatable, completely oblivious, probably got his headphones on.
He's not here to defend himself, but yes.
Yeah, which leaves Alex. I'm not really sure he fits his profile either, if I'm honest, but as the hard-bitten old fisherman who gets eaten when Jaws takes a big bite out the back of the boat. I mean, Alex certainly has a flair for telling stories, the dramatic flair to them. So he'd maybe fit in there because they have that scene, don't they, where they're all sat around the table telling stories. But yeah, good question, Patrick Palmer. Jaws, what a film. Have you let Aya watch Jaws yet, Stu? Still a bit young for that.
Absolutely not. No,
still a bit young for that. Right then, all of which brings us to the end of mailbag. Some good questions in there. Thanks very much for getting involved. And we're just coming up on the hour now, Stu, which did us perfectly into your return to Portman Road this weekend. The first game you've actually covered in person. I know you watched the Shakhtar game after the NewsQuest penny pinchers told us they couldn't send us to Austria. Disgrace. So you're going to be there in person anyway at Portman Road to see them play Nice this weekend. How are you feeling about it, mate? Because it's been bloody age. It's been a really weird pre-season in that respect, hasn't it? Because it's been so long.
Mm.
3 months, more than 3 months it'll be by the time you get back to Portman Road. You've not covered a football game in.
Yeah, pre-seasons have always had a certain rhythm to them, regardless of what division Ipswich have played in. Normally come back, have a sort of a local fixture. It was a bit of a disappointment this year that they didn't do a Felixstowe or a Needham or something like that. And yeah, they did a fair bit of behind closed doors in the early few weeks, and then haven't been away on one of the foreign trips, and haven't been to the likes of Germany and Holland and Ireland and stuff in the past. That was kind of a shame not to kind of do that as well. Understandably, I think Kieran wanted to keep things fairly sort of closed off to really kind of work on things and not have too much kind of external stuff, including the media. So yeah, felt a little bit sort of more detached from it than usual leading into a season, but it's meant that, you know, we've felt after quite a, you know, an intense season of Championship football, a little bit more rested going into the season, and certainly got a hankering for getting back to watching the real stuff and getting back to Portman Road and seeing what the stadium's looking like. Saturday will be interesting to see what team is picked. I think it's only really now that you can start to read into starting 11s. I think that gives you a pretty good indication of what the team's going to be like for Liverpool. The standard of the opposition, Nice finished fifth in Ligue 1 last season. Always fun to say Ligue 1.
That is fun to say, isn't it?
Yeah. They're in the Europa League, I think, off the back of that. Don't know loads about them yet. Need to do a bit more research on Nice, but I don't think Ipswich will. Of course, they'll do their preparations, but I saw a phrase from John McGrill sort of going into the under 21 game out in, is it Germany or Austria, the first one, where he talked about going into, sometimes it's good to go into these pre-season games eyes wide shut a little bit, and because it's, the focus is all on what we do and how we play, and it's not about doing that deep dive on the opposition and stopping their threats and things like that. So it's felt like a long time since that Huddersfield game and the pitch invasion. Be good to get back into it.
Yeah. As well as what goes on the pitch this weekend, it is going to be fascinating, isn't it, with a week to go to see what sort of state Portman Road is in, given that we saw, you know, all the behind-the-scenes stuff with Ashton and Hutchie on that excellent tour. I mean, where are you going to be, for example? Alex was in a suite, as a press box last time out. I wonder what kind of state the press box is in, if indeed it will be functional or not. How much of the improvements are going to be visible? Because it sounded like when the boys were there for the Fortuna game, it didn't feel like a lot had changed. But obviously there was quite a lot of stuff underway. So really fascinating. There's so many unknowns, isn't there, going into this season, on the pitch, off the pitch. Makes it exciting, but also mildly scary, Stu, mildly terrifying. What would you say, Stu, with a week to go? You touched on it earlier about the state of the squad, and clearly they've got six players through the door. Hopefully we'll get an update on George Hurst over the weekend as to what the state of his injury is. Does it feel to you like there's still quite a lot more that needs to be done?
I felt like they were nicely on pace with the transfers when they had the last flurry. Delap and Greaves kind of all happened over that same weekend, didn't it? Then it maybe feels like, because a few weeks have gone by and not a lot's happened, and then you throw into the mix the Broadhead and the Hurst injuries, feels like they're maybe now slightly behind schedule, potentially. But it was always going to be a balancing act between retaining the character of the group, this, you know, band of brothers feel that's kind of got them from League One all the way through to the Premier League, and not disrupting that too much, but adding some quality on top. I still feel there's some on and off field qualities that need to be filled. But as always, you kind of have to put our full faith in the manager, in the management team of Ashton and co, that they'll be on it and they'll be working hard behind the scenes, and there's still plenty of time. In some ways, having kind of Liverpool and Man City early on as, let's be honest, kind of free hits, means that it's probably good in a way, because you can then, the transfer business can still kind of quietly happen right up until the Fulham games right at the end of August. And then there's a 2-week international break to kind of bed in anyone who comes in late in the transfer window. So while it's always ideal to get people in early and get them away to training camps and bed them in, they've got to be the right players as well. I don't want Ipswich to kind of panic and overpay for Schmodix, for example, or sign players that, you know, just because they're available. We'll see what this next week or so brings, I guess.
Exciting stuff. Right then, friends, that brings us almost to an hour, which is the perfect length for a podcast. So I'll just remind you, support our sponsors, use the code KOA at manscaped.com for 20% off and free delivery and all that excellent stuff. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes if you could, friends. We've not had one of those for a little while. And it just helps lift us in the algorithm and visibility in the charts. So if you can do that, that'd be great. And also follow us across all social medias, Kings of Anglia on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok. Don't forget TikTok. You'll see Stu is sporting on his thickly muscled chest Kings of Anglia merch. Go and buy that. That's on all our various socials. And also, friends, I'm hoping this video goes out, but if I'm not, if it doesn't, I'm holding up the Mission Impossible bookazine, I think is what we're actually calling it. It's a fancy magazine, which basically is the story of Town's promotion season. So it's literally all the reports from last season as we printed them. Looks very sexy. It's very well designed. Essentially, the idea is it's a keepsake. It's a memento for you to keep. Reminds you of that ridiculous season where they did, let's be honest, the impossible. And if you want to buy that, it's available to buy on our and on NewsQuest store. Which again, if you want to find a link to that, go and look on my socials. I've been shouting about it quite a lot because I'm quite proud of it. Anything else from you, Stu? Anything else to mention?
Be good if we could be printing a Mission Impossible 2 this time next year, wouldn't it?
When they win the Premier League.
But no, but be... just when they stay up would be. Oh, okay. I think that would qualify for Mission Impossible 2, wouldn't it? Everyone's going to be writing them off, looking at the squad. But
that's I keep saying it. That's the thing that is so tantalising and terrifying at the same time, is we just don't know how competitive they could possibly hope to be until they kick off and we see how they do against Liverpool and Man City. And even if they get tonked by those two, that doesn't mean they're not competitive with the rest of the Premier League, does it?
No.
But then you look at the rest of the Premier League and you think, Jesus, the standard is unbelievable.
Mm. I've spent this week putting together kind of a few squad profiles and doing a kind of broad Premier League research. And it is a reminder of, like, for example, I'll just throw out one example. You go, could West Ham possibly be someone that, you know, Ipswich could sneak above? And then they've gone out and signed Germany's main striker in Füllkrug, and they've signed Somerville from Leeds,
yeah,
and others as well. So, I've been trying to sort of get my head around sort of effectively, I think Ipswich, we'll talk about this in a bit more detail next week, building up to the season. But I think it's almost a division of three thirds, I would say. There's a kind of a top eight or so that are pretty obvious, and then there's a middle group, and then it's whether Ipswich are probably in that lower third. But we'll dive into that a bit more next week, I guess.
Yeah, I think next week, in terms of what we bring you podcast wise, I think we may just do one big prediction preview show next week, the big annual KOA preview show, which will be, I reckon, probably Wednesday, Thursday sort of time. Stewie and Rossi are not around on Monday, so we probably won't do a post-match podcast, given that Alex isn't actually at the game on Saturday, so it'll be quite difficult to talk about it. So we may just, if you want kind of reaction from that, obviously Stu will be penning stuff over the weekend, and then we might just throw all our eggs into the big preview show basket next week, which will obviously be your classic. Where will Town finish? Who's going to score the most goals? Who's going to be the surprise package, et cetera, et cetera. And that's going to be interesting, Stu, doing that one this year, isn't it, compared to previous years. I'm not sure I'll be predicting Town are going to be top of the Premier League at any point, I will say, in my hot take. Friends, there we go then. Another show's in the books. There's a game to look forward to at Portman Road this weekend. If you are going, enjoy it. If you're not, follow it with us. And if you are there and you see Stuart Watson, go and give him a hug or a high five or a hearty slap on the back. He loves all that. And we'll be back, friends, next week to preview with capital letters the big kickoff. Almost hit, almost there, mate, almost there, just over a week before Ipswich Town host Liverpool at Portman Road to kick off the Premier League. Unbelievably exciting. Have a great weekend, friends, and we'll speak to you next time.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.